You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. This segment is sponsored by Ducks Unlimited. Join the thousands of volunteers having fun more than 3,500 times a year. Get involved at www.volunteerfordu.org. Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreeslein is with you for the next 60 minutes. Thanks for tuning in. Lots to talk about here. We will have Tim Lesmeister at the end of the show. In between, we'll have a couple guests. Tom Carpenter from Pheasants Forever will join us. We'll talk about what he saw out in South Dakota this year. He's probably hunted multiple states, so we'll get his pheasant report. And Tony Peterson will join us. Yeah, the rut is imminent, so we'll talk to Tony about that, get his tips. We're going to kick it off now with Tim Spielman. Tim, welcome. Good to see you. And I'm talking to you a little bit off air. I got outstate a little bit. And yeah, the crop harvest has definitely proceeded a lot. I did not see a soybean stalk between the Twin Cities and Houston County. Corn coming out fast, too.
I think the weather's been pretty conducive to that, to the corn harvest. I think the beans were coming out nicely probably about a month ago when I was duck hunting in that ag area. I didn't figure the corn would be too far behind. Pheasant hunting should improve. I always say that first for the deer hunters too. They've got 2 weeks now until the firearms opener.
Yep.
Corn being out should aid in the deer hunt too. And if the weather's even halfway good, I would expect that almost all of it should be gone by then.
We'll talk to Tom Carpenter maybe a little more about that, get his take on crop harvest and what it means for pheasant hunting. A number of stories I want to talk to you about, Tim. First, let's talk about the piece you bylined. It was on our website last week already. The Minnesota DNR looking for some poachers, some guys or gals, probably guys, let's face it, who took four trumpeter swans, breasted them out, and then tried to hide them in a black garbage bag in a random dumpster. And I give, was it a landowner or a business owner credit for recognizing that something doesn't look right and checking it out and, man, finding these dead birds?
Well, first of all, it was over by Glenwood, Villard, actually, just up the road from Glenwood, where this occurred. And I guess I don't think about it much, but when you put your garbage out, I suppose you know what color your garbage bag is. Right. And that's what this landowner, property owner realized was his garbage cans were tipped over at the end of his driveway and it was the wrong colored bags. And he kind of felt them, it sounded like, to see what was in them without opening them. And at first, I think he thought it was a deer. I would have probably, my mind would have gone somewhere crazy. I would have probably called the sheriff's department before I called the CO. But anyway, he called the CO who came out and opened up a couple of bags and there were two dead and breasted out trumpeter swans, two in each bag, I believe. So when it's a situation like that, I know we had it on social media and there were some crazy theories going around. But I mean, you got to look at the simplest probability first. And that's that somebody shot trumpeter swans and breasted them out. And apparently they knew that they were doing something wrong if they went to the trouble of disposing them in someone else's garbage. So
right.
To me, like CO Andrew Ledzinski said, it looks very intentional. Somebody who took a chance and now they're looking for that person and it's going to be a tough find. It's been about a week since I wrote that story and I haven't heard any feedback about it, but still, you know, you want to let people know what's going on out there. And if anybody happens to read it, has some knowledge of the incident. And it's funny, the CEOs, I don't know if it's the younger generation, but they have a point too. But the first go-to is we'll solve this case, but it's going to take something extraordinary, like the person posting it on social media and in talking to enforcement people. That happens so much. And how stupid do you have to be? I know we talked about that probably many times in the past, but you know, if that's what your case is sort of relying on because you just don't have any leads, it could happen. I mean, I kind of scoff at it, but it could happen. Because it's happened so many times before. But so far, nothing.
You know, back when we were kids, Tim, I remember talking to COs about, you know, so often some poacher would go down to the bar and get a couple belts in him and start shooting his mouth off, and word would get out. And social media is kind of the new bar room, right? I mean, you know, someone goes home, has a couple beers and thinks, maybe I will shoot my mouth off here. No one will be the wiser. And yeah, there's a lot of ways that this can come out. Speaking of social media, though, Tim, I mean, some of the comments on that story, I mean, I know you and I do this for a living, but just some of the ignorance regarding, you know, hunting of these birds is just absolutely shocking. I mean, I think one person said something along the lines of, these guys could have been totally legal because the season's open in North Dakota. Well, no, it's not. There's no trumper swan hunting anywhere in the region. There's tundra swan hunting in North Dakota part of the year. It's a totally different species. There's nowhere you can be hunting trumpeter swans. Now, Tim, and at least I almost speak for you, Tim, but we think there's enough of these birds to consider a hunt for them. But there isn't one now, and that's just a cold, hard fact. So that's poaching, you know, if you're out there taking them right now.
And use your common sense. If there was a season in North Dakota, you legally harvested something in North Dakota, who's going to drag a smelly carcass all the way to Villard, Minnesota to throw them in a random garbage can? It's just ridiculous, some of the comments, but it might explain some of the spelling we see too, but that's another story.
Well, yeah, there's a whole other animal. Yeah, someone else making the whole, they're an invasive species. It's like no, they're not. Now there's mute swans, which aren't invasive species and are not protected. But I don't see those very often anymore. I think we've done a pretty good job of not allowing. Maybe the trumpeter swans run them out. Now trumpeters were extirpated in Minnesota. They're a native species that were driven extinct, and they have been re-released and hugely successful to the point that they almost seem like an exotic species. They've been so successful, but they're not. And that's why they're protected.
Yep.
Yeah, there's a lot of layers here, but man, I wish sometimes people would think a little bit before they post, huh?
Word to the wise, don't take what you read on social media posts as gospel ever. Yeah. Unless I write it, then it's probably pretty close.
All right. There you go. Well, anyway, read Tim's story at outdoornews.com or in the print version. And if you have any information, we'd love to bust these guys. I guess at least the breast on these things got used, Tim, for whatever that's worth.
Well, you know, maybe down the road sometime, someone will say, hey, guess what I had for supper tonight? And all of a sudden, CO Ladzinski might get a call. So hang on to those carcasses and keep that case open, CO Ladzinski. There you go.
Outdoor News Radio, Rob Dreisein and Tim Spielman kicking off this week's show. Tim, I want to issue, not a mea culpa, but I kind of got thinking a little bit. We talked a lot last week about the Office of Legislative Auditor report on forestry and forest practices on state WMAs and wildlife management areas. We had a letter to the editor. I got to tip the hat to old Mark Herwig, a former editor of Pheasants Forever magazine. He writes letters, three, four, five times a year to us, Tim. But he had a good one. He made a really great point about this. I mean, he sounded pretty ticked off about the whole thing. But he said that, you know, he's got some acreage in, what did he call it, the Sustainable Forestry Initiative. And
It's Carrollton County wooded area.
You know. Yeah, and he's got 40 acres. And I don't know what Mark makes off that. I think he said enough to cover his taxes. So it's, I'm just picking a number, say $1,500 a year or a couple thousand dollars a year, something like that. And he said he's got to show proof that he's following sustainable forestry practices, and he's got to verify that to, you know, so that he can continue to be part of that program. And then you got the DNR with way, way more acreage that's just loosey-goosey. That got me thinking. I mean, there's part of me that's felt like this story's been, I'm sick of talking about it. I'm a little overblown, but that's a very, very valid point that Mark brought up.
Yeah, it's always good to hear from Mark. He seems to get fired up about things, and that's the kind of letters we like.
Before we go, Tim, Black Bear Harvest had a nice little pulse at the end of the season, sounded like. Mm-hmm. Still below 2024 harvest when there was a lot of natural food. There wasn't a lot of natural food on the landscape last year, so we had a big bear harvest. But the warm weather into October kept things going.
Yeah. And, you know, I read Natalie's story and we were at 2,800, which was down considerably from last year. Last year was a phenomenal year, and but it was up from the previous year, which was a really bad year. So back to a fairly normal harvest. I'm not a really great bear hunting mind, but when the guide in the story mentioned the great weather in October, which was, what did he say, 80 degrees and something or another, I thought, gosh, that sounds like it's really warm for bear hunting. But apparently it gets people into the woods. I think that's probably the bottom line. So there was, like you said, a really good pulse of harvest toward the end, which brought that harvest up to a pretty respectable level, almost 2,900 bears, which is a good year in Minnesota.
You know, again, I'm not a great bear hunting mind either, but I suspect that warm weather keeps the bears moving and hungry and hitting the baits, you know, and, and when the bear hunters see that action, that keeps them motivated too. So, All right. Well, lots of other headlines to talk about. Les Meister and I will talk about this corner crossing case a little bit later, as well as maybe my column, the moose thing. But Tim, good to see you, and we'll talk to you in 7 days.
All right. Sounds real good.
All right. Tim Spielman, editor at Outdoor News. We're going to break. We'll probably talk pheasants when we return. This is Outdoor News Radio.
Whatever you're hunting, be it small game, predators, gobblers, or big game, Henry Repeating Arms has a rifle or shotgun you can trust. With over 200 models to choose from, every Henry is proudly made in Wisconsin, backed by a lifetime warranty and supported by top customer service. From the squirrel woods to deer camp, there's a Henry for your hunt. Order your free Henry catalog today at henryusa.com. You'll also get a sheet of decals, the Henry Repeater newsletter, and a personalized list of local dealers. That's henryusa.com. Get your free catalog today and gear up for the season.
Cold temperatures are on the way. If you're a hunter, you want to stay out longer, no matter what the thermometer says. Arctic Shield, L&M Fleet Supply, and Outdoor News are teaming up to give away the best cold weather hunting gear in the industry. Between now and the end of October, you can win a full set of Prodigy Vapor jacket and pants. We'll give away 2 full sets per week in October. To enter, just click on the contest tab at OutdoorNews.com.
Whether you're hunting private or public ground, Onyx Hunt gives you the edge. With detailed land ownership maps, you'll know exactly where you stand. Add in advanced weather, wind, and radar tools, and you've got the full picture to plan every hunt. Now, with Moultrie Mobile Trail Cam integration, you can even see photos from your cams right on the map for smarter scouting and better stand decisions. Download the Onyx Hunt app today and start your free 7-day trial.
The journey to deer camp only comes once a year, and we know you've got plenty of heavy, bulky gear to pack. Introducing the new Diverge case from Plano. Lightweight where it counts, tough when it matters. Ultra durable and lightweight thanks to a tough shell exterior with high density foam that delivers molded protection without the bulk. And a drop zone lid tray provides a convenient workstation for keys, cartridges, and coffee during pre-hunt prep. The new Diverge series cases from Plano. Don't just kinda be ready, be Plano ready.
Attention hunters, have you bagged an impressive whitetail buck this season? Then show it off at the Outdoor News Best Buck Contest, sponsored by Federal. The contest runs through January 2026. Bow, rifle, or muzzleloader, all hunters are welcome. Visit OutdoorNews.com for a shot at great prizes and bragging rights. Click the Best Buck Contest link atop the page at OutdoorNews.com to learn more, enter, and view official rules. That's OutdoorNews.com.
If you're deer hunting in Minnesota this season, be aware of chronic wasting disease. Sampling for CWD is mandatory in CWD zones during the opening weekend of firearm season, November 8th and 9th. Be aware that deer feeding and attractant bans are in place. Check online to see if your county is affected. Carcass movement restrictions are also in place. Dispose of your deer carcass locally and don't drive the disease. Learn more and check if your DPA has CWD requirements at mndnr.gov/deerhunt. That's mndnr.gov/deerhunt.
Howdy, folks. Welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Dreisline. Thanks so much for tuning in. I hope you like the content here of the broadcast, by the way. If so, check us out online at OutdoorNews.com or call us at 800-535-5191. Tom Carpenter from Pheasants Forever, he's the editor of the Pheasants Forever magazine, is joining us now. I haven't talked to him in about a year. Tom, how are you doing, man? Did you get one of your children married off here in the past year?
I got 2 married off last year, and so they got those done. But everything's good. Been busy doing a lot of hunting this fall, a lot of work in for PF. Everything's cool.
You've been doing some hunting. You already got out pheasant hunting in Minnesota. Is that correct? Done any other bird hunting? Did you chase some sharptails or anything yet?
Yes, I've been chasing one of my first loves, the sharptails. I've been out to North Dakota twice chasing them. I chased Minnesota prairie chickens.
Oh.
Been rough grouse and woodcock hunting a couple times. Haven't had much luck on the grouse or woodcock. I'm more of a prairie guy, but I'll give the woodcock another try here. I think now that it's the end of October, I think they're starting to doodle on through.
I want to circle back to all these other birds, but you got my spidey sense tingling when you mentioned prairie chickens. That is a tag you have to apply for, correct?
Yes.
And so you got drawn, and did you bag a prairie chicken?
Yeah, I got one prairie chicken and one sharptail. You can shoot sharptails in the prairie chicken zone if you have a prairie chicken tag.
Uh-huh.
And I did not get two chickens this year, but it's a fun hunt. You only get to do it, depending on the unit, every 2 to 4 years.
Okay.
And so you got to keep on it, keep applying, getting points. And it's a pretty special hunt. It's up in the northwestern corner of the state. For serious uplanders, it's sort of a real treat to shoot a Minnesota prairie chicken.
Yeah, what do they give out, like 100 tags a year, something like that?
I think 100, 125. It's not a big amount. And that's about how many birds they harvest. It averages out to about a bird a person every year annually. It's a fun hunt. It runs along the ridge of Glacial Lake Agassiz, which is the edge of the Red River Valley, the eastern beach. It's sandy, it's rocky, there's more grass there. And it's the one spot where prairie chickens have held on in Minnesota.
I got to give you a quick joke. When Roger Holmes, the former DNR Fish and Wildlife Division director, retired, he'd been around a while. And I remember Tom Dixon, do you know Tom by any chance?
No, I don't.
Tom, he used to be the Fish and Wildlife Division, a public information guy. He moved to Montana probably 20 years ago. Great guy. He was the MC and he did a shtick where he said that Roger Holmes was so old, he remembered the great walleye stocking controversy on Glacial Lake Agassiz. that was when walleye stocking was controversial in Minnesota too. So anyway, I'm sorry to go off on a total tangent there, but that was a good joke. I remember it. So.
It gave me a new joke to add to my repertoire.
Good. All right. Back to birds. So what do you love about sharptails so much, Don?
Oh, wide open prairie, watching the dog work. It's usually easy and pleasant. Yeah, I always describe pheasant hunting as combat. And sharptail hunting is more of a stroll. And I like combat as much as the next guy, and we'll talk about some of that. But sharptail hunting is just, it's shorter grass, it's more open country, uh-huh. It's usually milder weather, although I am going to hunt some here in October when I go up to North Dakota later this week. Because you're not a real sharptail hunter if you only hunt them in September. You got to get out and hunt them in October and or November. So that's it. They're a pleasant stroll versus combat of pheasants.
Yeah, that's very well put. I hunted Sharpies once in north central South Dakota, and that absolutely describes the experience pretty well. All right. Well, we better talk pheasants here a little bit. That's the bread and butter bird for a lot of listeners and a lot of folks. And of course, for the organization you work for, Pheasants Forever, pheasantsforever.org. So the season opened here, a couple weeks ago now already. What did you see? I'm hearing pretty good reports. A lot of birds, maybe a little too much corn out there still for opening weekend, but bodes well for the middle part of the season.
Yeah, I think bird numbers are good. You know, I can only see so much. I did hunt 5 days the first week, and my son made a day trip. I have personal experience on 7 hunting days so far during the season and, of course, talked to a lot of people. I think bird numbers are good. I think people are getting birds. I do believe corn was a factor opening weekend. Now I've had this wet. It might have delayed the harvest. And corn is never really an excuse, but it does have an effect. I mean, the first morning I got to my spot, you know, about 7 a.m. and at dawn, I saw 6 roosters hop up and fly across the road into the standing corn. So a lot of the trick for success early on, the first week anyway, was finding places where the corn had been harvested. But west central Minnesota, I thought was fine. I was down in the southwest corner of the state, did really well down there during the first week. Saw a lot of small birds. I think I had a lot of birds that get 30 yards out and go, ee-ee-ee-ee, and you go, oh, that was a young rooster. And whether you like to shoot a young rooster or not, and I would, you know, they were just a little on the small side. It was gray, not a lot of color in the sky, or not a sunshine you couldn't see. Those birds are going to be coloring up and coming into the system too, so to speak. So I think the hunting's only going to get better. I think hunting pressure has been strong. It can be a challenge if you're a hunter, but it's also good to see all these people interested in pheasants. But no matter what, hunting pressure always sort of drops off every week of the season. So keep going hunting if you're a serious pheasant hunter. There's birds out there, and with more corn going, it's going to be even better.
You listen to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline here. We are chatting with Tom Carpenter. He's the editor of Pheasants Forever's magazine, Journal of Upland Hunting. As you can tell, if you've been listening to this interview, he's a hardcore upland bird hunter himself. Go figure. And offering some good advice. I've been around the state a couple times in the past week to 10 days, Tom, and I see the corn coming down really fast. I mean, it definitely accelerated, I think, after after that pheasant hunting opener. Soybeans are all gone. I mean, those went really fast. So I think it's just going to improve. We had the South Dakota opener last weekend. I know you weren't out there, but have you heard any reports on how things are going in South Dakota?
There's a lot of birds out there this year. Things I've seen from friends on social media, I think everything's going great in South Dakota. And I think sort of the same thing. I probably won't be in South Dakota until December, which is usually the way it is. And that's when there's not many hunters left, and there's still a lot of birds left, and all the crops are always gone.
Right.
And it's a pretty primo time to go. I think if you're going to go to South Dakota, don't feel like you're missing out. There's still going to be birds there as the season goes on. And the other thing is, if we have a nice January, you can hunt right through the end of January in South Dakota. And if you can get around in your vehicle and not be post-holing with your legs or swimming your dog through snow, there's still good hunting in January. There's a lot of season left.
People who know pheasant hunting say the past 2 years in Minnesota have been good to very good, and this season seems to be maintaining that trend. What are you chalking that up to, Tom? Is it the fact that we've just had some milder winters? These aren't the best of times for CRP. I mean, you and I both saw better days for CRP in terms of the number of acres out there 20, 25 years ago. There's some permanent grass out there, right, in the form of wildlife management areas and waterfowl production areas. That's having a positive effect, I'd like to think.
Yeah, I think, to bring Pheasants Forever into it, everything we do is related to grassland, be it permanent protection or be it through federal programs that put programs like CREP, CRP, and others on the landscape. And we are, in my opinion, probably coming to a tipping point on that private land grasslands. We really need CRP is what everybody knows it as, but there's other sub programs within it. We really need to let our legislators, let everybody know that's super important, that and agricultural producers want it. Pheasants Forever and ag producers actually go hand in hand, because where you put CRP are the places on fields that are not productive.
Right.
It's called precision agriculture. It's good for producers because fewer inputs in every form, seed, gas, fertilizer, time. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't pay on high rocky land or low wetland that floods out every third year. CRP is important. We need to push for a good farm bill that's going to have conservation opportunities, voluntary opportunities in it for landowners. The other thing, Pheasants Forever, is the permanent protection. You think about, why do we have pheasant hunters in Minnesota? It's because we have this incredible public land base. And much of that relates back to Pheasants Forever and the acquisitions we do in conjunction with partners, and also the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Council, the Minnesota DNR, funding with partners to get these permanent lands on the landscape. So that habitat produces pheasants. That's simple as I can say it. But what also does it is, yes, you said winters. Winters the last couple haven't been bad. And the other thing is the hatch. When you get a good pheasant season, it always comes down to the hatch. And everybody was sort of worried this year because they're ecstatic. April and May were dry and warm and nesting started. And then June came and it got wet. But from every indication, was just late enough that we had a good first hatch. Mm-hmm. And there were some places in the state that washed out when you get more northwards on the west side of the state. But I think that's why we've had good numbers the last 2 years. But to harken back to what I was saying about Farm Bill programs, conservation, voluntary conservation, and also permanent protection, we're not going to have this good of hunting as we've had the last couple years if habitat starts going the other direction. It's all related to habitat.
I'm glad you brought that up, Tom. We've gone too long without a farm bill. We need Congress. We need this administration to act and make it a priority and get a farm bill done. Because, yeah, CRP acres are slipping, and we want to make sure that we see solid hunting opportunities and grassland. I mean, it's good grassland's good for a lot of things, not just hunting. It's good for a lot of societal benefits. So thank you for spending some time on that, Tom. I'm out of time for this segment. I appreciate you joining us. Good luck the rest of the season, Tom. It's always good to see you. And any closing thoughts before I let you go?
If you want to talk hunting tactics, give me another call. Then you'll really get me whipped up.
All right. Excellent. Well, we will save that for another interview. Tom, thanks a lot. Have a good week ahead and good luck the rest of the season.
Thanks, Rob.
Yeah, Tom Carpenter from Pheasants Forever, pheasantsforever.org. See all the great work that organization is up to. Let's break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
The journey to deer camp only comes once a year, and we know you've got plenty of heavy, bulky gear to pack. Introducing the new Diverge case from Plano. Lightweight where it counts, tough when it matters. Ultra durable and lightweight thanks to a tough shell exterior with high density foam that delivers molded protection without the bulk. And a drop zone lid tray provides a convenient workstation for keys, cartridges, and coffee during pre-hunt prep. The new Diverge series cases from Plano. Don't just kinda be ready, be Plano ready.
Cold temperatures are on the way. If you're a hunter, you want to stay out longer, no matter what the thermometer says. Arctic Shield, L&M Fleet Supply, and Outdoor News are teaming up to give away the best cold weather hunting gear in the industry. Between now and the end of October, you can win a full set of Prodigy Vapor jacket and pants. We'll give away two full sets per week in October. To enter, just click on the contest tab at OutdoorNews.com.
You fish the same waters year after year. But what if your next best fishing story is just a few miles away? Onyx Fish builds on 15 years of experience, giving hunters and adventurers a revolutionary angling tool to help you find new water, new access, and new fish. Find the right lake. Know the species, size, and abundance. Get expert local insight. Navigate to the right ramp fast. Then go fish in new lakes like they're your home waters. Don't chase reports. Make your own with Onyx Fish.
Is a trip to Alaska on your bucket list? It's time to dump that bucket and buy your ticket. And while you're there, fish the Kenai River with Jason's Guide Service. Jason is considered the best when it comes to catching Alaskan salmon, rainbow trout, and char. He's one of only a few guides that has the permit to fish in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, where the salmon are easy targets and the trout and char are plentiful. So cross that Alaskan fishing trip off your list and check out jasonsguideservice.com. That's jasonsguideservice.com.
If you're hunting deer in Minnesota or surrounding states this season, be aware that deer carcass movement restrictions are in place in Minnesota. You cannot move whole intact carcasses out of CWD management zones or into Minnesota from other states, and only certain parts of your harvest can be transported. If you're heading to a licensed taxidermist from hunting out of state or in a CWD zone, there are regulations for you too. Visit mndnr.gov/deer imports to learn more. That's mndnr.gov/deer imports.
Our outdoor heritage is at a crossroads. Fewer hunters and anglers mean less support for the wild places we love. The Outdoor News Foundation is changing that story, one young person at a time. For just $25, you can give a child a year of outdoor knowledge via scholarships, camps, and access to OutdoorNews.com. This Give to the Max Day help us cast a legacy for tomorrow's hunters and anglers. Visit OutdoorNews.com/foundation to get involved and donate today.
Welcome back, folks. Outdoor News Radio, another segment. Thanks for tuning in. Check us out online at OutdoorNews.com if you like the content here. Or call us at 800-535-5191 if you would like to subscribe to print or digital versions. Makes a great holiday gift. Hey, our friend Tony Peterson is joining us. Read him at themeateater.com, but he's been a longtime friend of this program. Tony, good to see you. Sounds like you've been on the road quite a bit this time of year. Go figure, huh?
Right. Yeah, we've been traveling around a little bit, trying to get the girls some deer and really kind of gearing up now for this rut travel that's coming up too.
Tell us where you've been, mostly Wisconsin and Minnesota, or have you been to some other states?
Just Minnesota and Wisconsin so far. I'm going to head out to do a long run in North Dakota and Nebraska here shortly, but we've been we've been hunting here in the suburbs of the cities, you know, with the girls, and then a lot of time over in the North Woods up in Wisconsin, getting our butts kicked over there. So it's, those are the two states we've been really focusing on right now, but I'm going to expand here in a little bit.
Looks like one of your daughters took a deer. I thought I saw that on a social media post, Tony.
Yeah, one of my daughters killed a spike over in northern Wisconsin, which puts her at 4 for 4 the last four seasons on spikes.
Wow.
So, which is kind of, it kind of became an inside joke like 2 years ago. And then, you know, last year she killed this little velvet spike on opening day. And then this year, you know, we had a few deer working on this property and one of them was a spike. And she's like, Dad, I want that spike. And of course, that's the one that came in. But my other, her sister, yeah, she's been hunting hard and we have really been struggling over in Wisconsin, but I got on a little piece here in the suburbs and she killed a 4-pointer the other night. So she's real happy. We just did a hunt over MEA. I took her over to Wisconsin and we did 7 sits and never saw a deer. Just rough, man. Low deer numbers. And the last night we were sitting there, the wolves lit up. So I think that's that kind of explained a little bit of what I was seeing, because a lot of the stuff that I usually hunt, I'm like, man, it seems like the deer are literally just not here. But there's more deer out by, there's a highway that runs past this property. And I'm like, man, it seems like they're hanging out real close to that road. No, and then we hear those wolves light up and you go, okay, well, that makes total sense.
Yeah. Anybody who's watched whitetail deer in wolf country has encountered that phenomenon before. And you're in central Wisconsin, aren't you? Or were you farther north?
I would say we are right at the gateway to the big wood stuff. So we're far enough north where right where we hunt, you basically run out of ag. You know, if there's if there's a field there, a lot of times it's just like a horse hay field kind of thing. You know, they can find a cornfield if they try hard. You have some, you know, you have a lot of oaks, but you also, you know, some of the places I've been hunting over there, you know, there are like 65,000 acres of public land that's all big woods, kind of just like right on the doorstep.
Tony, let's bring it back home here to Minnesota a little bit and talk about what the outlook is. We're getting into the last full weekend of October here. That's really getting to be prime time in a typical year for rutting deer behavior. Finally, some frost across a good portion of the state leading into the weekend. We had a lot of heat. October, even the first half of October was remarkably warm. Let's talk about that first. What did that do to deer hunting during that period? Did deer activity, was it slower than normal, slower than average because of that? What did you see a field?
I saw a lot of deer in that early season when it was hot. I killed a buck here in the cities on my first sit, and it was 87 degrees.
Wow.
I took my daughter out on opening night in southeastern Minnesota, and we sat a pond, and we saw 19 deer, 4 bucks. We had just a crazy action-packed evening. We didn't kill one. But, you know, I've said this a million times and written about it. Those deer coming out of August, then they're not that sensitive to the heat. Like, it's not that big of a deal. We are. We don't want to hunt, you know, and that's the thing that I actually really like about it is, like, a lot of hunters then are just not going to go. And so that just opens up more options. It's a little bit different of a game now if you get real heat. You know, it affects them differently, but it still doesn't shut them down. Like, they're going to still do their thing.
Yeah, I guess deer are adjusting to the new normal, just like all the other species have to. You know, you're a hardcore bull hunter. This is prime time, isn't it? Tell us, you know, what the rut means to you as an archer and why it's such an important time.
I love the rut. Everybody loves the rut, right? But I kind of have a weird relationship with it being, you know, primarily a Minnesota hunter for most of my life, because that early shotgun season, I'm like, I'm out of the woods as a bow hunter. And so I've spent a lot of my time trying to kill deer in September and October. But, you know, over the last probably 15 years, I've tried to take a trip somewhere to hunt the rut or even skip over to Wisconsin. And it's just fun. And the last week of October, the first couple of days of November, to me, are my favorite now. They get a little bit more predictable, I think. Kill them in staging areas. You don't have to kill them cruising through pinch points. It just, there's a lot of options. It's a lot of fun.
Firearms opener is not until November 8th this year, arguably a little bit later. I mean, that gives archers here 2 solid weeks from when we're talking to get out and take advantage of this time frame. And I mean, I think we're into seasonable temperatures finally. I'm cautious. I don't necessarily say colder than normal temperatures, because it's not. It's been right around seasonable. It's setting up pretty well for archers here these last 2 weeks, isn't it?
Yeah, I think we have a full moon on the 5th. You'll hear people complain about that a little bit. But yeah, I mean, it's, everybody likes to talk about early rut, late rut, what happens. it's the same time every year. It just, it has to be, because otherwise those fawns wouldn't survive. You know, this is not something that, you know, kind of moves around whimsically in the fall. It just happens because it has to happen, and it has happened that way for thousands of years. It's just a matter of whether you're going to catch a whole bunch of movement because it's 25 degrees in the morning and frosty, or it's going to be a little bit more subdued during the day when it's, if it, you know, gets up 50, 60 degrees.
Outdoor News Radio, Rob Gerisa, and chatting with our friend Tony Peterson about rutting deer behavior as we bear down on the firearms deer opener on November 8th. Prime time for archers to get out there and target deer during this important time frame when really it's about breeding activity. That's what the rut is all about. Tony, you mentioned the moon. Why do some archers or some hunters not like a full moon?
You know, full moon at night gives them a lot better light to see. And so it just feels like there's a lot more movement at night. They're more comfortable. You know, I mean, if you head over to Africa, they hunt around the moon. You know, you're going to, if you book an African safari, you're going to hunt around the new moon. It's going to be more movement in daylight. The same thing happens with whitetails too. I mean, you think about those deer we were talking about in Wisconsin that are dealing with the, you know, and obviously Minnesota here too, but bears, not as big of a factor right now, but wolves, coyotes, bobcats are out there. If they can see better at night, they just have a better chance to move around and do their thing, you know, and avoid predation.
Tony, I didn't know that. If you book a hunt in Africa, you will quite often book around moon phase?
Yeah.
Huh?
For sure. I mean, imagine being a prey animal in Africa. Yeah, right. I mean, you'd figure out every advantage you could get for when you could move safely.
Sure. Everything's trying to eat you or trying to hunt you. So, Tony, when you're out rut hunting for whitetail deer during these two prime weeks, what are you doing? Are you watching scrape lines? Are you looking for rubs? Are you mock scraping? What tactics do you recommend to folks who might be listening?
I don't hunt scrapes during the rut. I hunt scrapes in October. I don't ignore them, but they're not like a key part of my strategy. You know, rubs tell you a lot about where bucks spend a lot of time. So pre-rut, I really like rubs. Like if I'm bumping up on Halloween, you know, the last couple of days of October, those deer, if I'm finding rubs in the cover, I know those deer probably made them in daylight and they're going to be pretty likely to move in those areas. So I like that a lot. But as soon as we get to that, you know, chasing, cruising type phase, that's all terrain to me. I'm sitting on terrain traps, you know, pinch points, funnels, whatever's going to force their movement. And then it's just a matter of putting in the time.
Good. Well, I want to talk to you more next week about, next week will be the last week of archery deer hunting before the firearms hunt. Maybe we can preview the firearms deer season a little bit too. Before I let you go though, I wanted to talk to you. We got some crossbow data from the Minnesota DNR. I don't know if you saw that report, Tony, and what the DNR said, that they don't believe that crossbows have resulted in a lot of extra pressure on the deer herd yet. In fact, they touted the R3 aspect of crossbows. They did allude to the fact that, you know, there's definitely maybe some more interest in some of these lottery areas. Now with a crossbow, you can take either deer, right? Versus right. If you're a firearms hunter, you can only shoot a buck in those lottery areas unless you get the doe tag. What are you seeing afield? Are you seeing a lot of crossbows afield? Do you have any concerns about the pressure they're putting on the antlerless deer?
It's so hard to say. I mean, where I hunt, the populations are good enough where I don't know if you would notice that, you know?
And that's the DNR's point too, right?
Right. It's different because it's, when you get into a state that, you know, we're a one buck state, right?
Right.
Like, and so if we had a whole bunch of extra crossbow hunters killing deer, I think you would know, but I think we just transitioned a lot of vertical bow hunters to crossbow hunters. I mean, that's what happened in my world for a lot of people I know. They moved over quick, you know? And so they're the same bow hunters that were always out there. They're just now carrying a different weapon. And, you know, I would say that they're probably, I don't know if we'll see a little bit of creep up with the success ratio. Just because it's an easier weapon to use. Mm-hmm. But I don't foresee that being a huge impact on our resource. I mean, it was like, you know, just for example, over in Wisconsin where we hunt, you know, you can shoot a buck on an archery tag and a buck on a firearms tag. We saw an increase where I hunt on buck harvest with archery tackle because now you know, people who weren't going to pick up a vertical bow could pick up a crossbow and hunt and kill a buck and still have their rifle hunt.
Okay.
So you see it. I mean, it varies a lot by state, but in a state where we're a one buck state, it doesn't seem to be, at least in a lot of places, a huge impact on the resource.
I think it's going to be interesting if we get a few bad winters again and we have more lottery areas and more, you know, need for applying for antlerless tags in some areas. You know, if the crossbow harvest starts to impact the antlerless deer kill a little bit, and that could result in fewer antlerless tags, then, you know, then we might hear some grumbling. But until then, I think everyone agrees it's not having a huge impact. Tony, you'll join me again next week?
Absolutely.
That's our friend Tony Peterson. Thanks for joining me, Tony. Have a good week ahead.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Rob.
Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Whether you're hunting private or public ground, Onyx Hunt gives you the edge. With detailed land ownership maps, you'll know exactly where you stand. Add in advanced weather, wind, and radar tools, and you've got the full picture to plan every hunt. Now, with Moultrie Mobile Trail Cam integration, you can even see photos from your cams right on the map for smarter scouting and better stand decisions. Download the Onyx Hunt app today and start your free 7-day trial.
Attention hunters, have you bagged an impressive whitetail buck this season? Then show it off at the Outdoor News Best Buck Contest, sponsored by Federal. The contest runs through January 2026. Bow, rifle, or muzzleloader, all hunters are welcome. Visit OutdoorNews.com for a shot at great prizes and bragging rights. Click the Best Buck Contest link atop the page at OutdoorNews.com to learn more, enter, and view official rules. That's OutdoorNews.com.
If you're hunting deer in Minnesota or surrounding states this season, be aware that deer carcass movement restrictions are in place in Minnesota. You cannot move whole, intact carcasses out of CWD management zones or into Minnesota from other states, and only certain parts of your harvest can be transported. If you're heading to a licensed taxidermist from hunting out of state or in a CWD zone, there are regulations for you too. Visit mndnr.gov/deerimports to learn more. That's mndnr.gov/deerimports.
Are you ready to hit the frozen waters and reel in some epic catches? The all-new OutdoorNews.com is your ultimate resource for all things ice fishing. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, OutdoorNews.com is the source for the latest tips, techniques, and gear reviews. Stay ahead of the rest with the most up-to-date ice conditions, fishing reports, and hotspots to maximize your success. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to elevate your hard water game. Visit OutdoorNews.com today and become part of the ice angling revolution.
We are the young minds that will shape tomorrow's world. But today, the world is in your hands. What's your vision for the future? Since 1937, Ducks Unlimited has been the world leader in wetlands and waterfowl conservation. And we've had the same vision for the future for more than 75 years. A future with clean water, abundant wildlife, plenty of places to enjoy nature, and wetlands, sufficient to fill the skies with waterfowl today, tomorrow, and forever. Sure, there's still a whole lot of work to be done, but we know we can turn things around together because we are the next generation of DU conservationists. And with a little help from you, our future is looking really bright. Ducks Unlimited, working for conservation for generations to come. Help carve a path for the next generation of DU conservationists at www.ducks.org/generations. A public service from Ducks Unlimited.
Welcome back, folks. Final segment of this week's broadcast on Outdoor News Radio. I've got Tim Lesmeister here to help me bring it home. Read him at OutdoorNews.com. Read us both in the print version of our newspaper. You can subscribe by calling 800-535-5191 or, again, visit us at OutdoorNews.com. Makes a great holiday gift. A good time of year, of course, to be thinking about the holiday gifts. Tim, welcome. Good to see you. On your way to Florida, I believe, and how soon do you expect to be wetting a line down there in the Gulf of Mexico?
Probably in just a few days. The fishing right now in Florida sounds to be very good. I actually stopped off at Lake of the Ozarks on the way down. That's an annual trip now. Ray's, my wife's brother, has a place on the lake, and we usually go out and we fish for crappies, bass. We always catch a few catfish while doing that. But this year, boy, the wind was coming through there. It was howling, and it blew us literally right off the lake. So I never got a chance to even get out on the water on Lake of the Ozarks. And so I'm deciding that Florida is my next best opportunity to get out and catch some fish. So it sounds like they've been getting them offshore, and I'm really looking forward to getting out in the boat here in just a few days.
Yeah, the wind picked up here in the upper Midwest during the middle part of this past week, too. Finally, some seasonable temperatures, maybe even a degree or two below normal. Wow. Back up above normal this weekend, however. Beautiful weekend. I'm sure folks are going to get out and enjoy the great weather for grouse hunting, pheasant hunting. Tim, let's talk some news stories because there were a couple of big ones that Spielman and I did not get to. One, we had this corner crossing case that's been stewing out west for, 4 years? Finally made its way all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. The landowner in the case, apparently Deep Pockets, just kept appealing. Finally, the Supreme Court saying, we're not interested in taking this case. So the lower court ruling now stands from the Tenth Circuit, which means that hunters now can continue to cross between two corners, two pieces of public land, thereby potentially violating the airspace of private land in adjacent corners. It's a win for sportsmen. A lot of sporting groups, BHA, American Hunters and Anglers, guys like Lantani, were very, very excited about this ruling. Step in the right direction for hunters, I think.
Yeah, it is. And it always irritates me when these people that have private property that abuts public land think of the public land as theirs. This happens a lot. You'd be surprised at how much, especially out in those western states. But even in the Midwest here, it does as well. I've had to deal with situations before here in Minnesota where I've been hunting on public land, and people that had private land next to it came up to me, and they were just basically verbally abusing me because I was too close to their fence line. And, you know, it's just not right. I mean, you're getting into a situation here where we've set a precedent. And this is actually a great precedent. I wish the Supreme Court would have taken up the case, and I wish they would have ruled in favor of those individuals that were corner crossing because, you know, then nationally it would have been a precedent. But I believe it's a pretty good precedent anyway, and it is affecting the western states where this district court made this decision. I'm very, very happy about it, and I hope that this precedent will hold in other situations too that might come up in certain areas outside of where that ruling was made.
So the 10th Circuit includes the states of Wyoming, Utah, Colorado, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Kansas, along with parts of Yellowstone National Park that stretch into Idaho and Montana, totals like 3.5 million acres of public lands. Now, the rest of the country outside of those states are still kind of in this limbo. It doesn't affect Montana, for example. There's a ton of public land checkerboarded out there, public land. And as for the Supreme Court aspect of this, Tim, I don't know how to feel. I don't trust the Supreme Court's decisions on almost anything these days. I'd almost be worried if they had taken up this case and really dug into it. Would some political influence started to come in on it? Would they have ruled the wrong way in that circumstance? So I guess part of me is glad they didn't take it, but it does definitely leave the rest of the country in this legal gray area. So I guess what's going to have to happen is some hunters out in Montana or another state, maybe even Minnesota, are going to have to find themselves in a similar corner crossing legal quandary and run it up the legal ladder and see what the courts rule. I'd like to think lower courts in other parts of the country, if that happened, would look at this 10th Circuit ruling and say, well, there's now legal precedent to support hunters. But I don't know. Maybe that's wishful thinking and it would end up in the Supreme Court again.
You know, I always tell people, if you're going to be out there hunting and it's questionable where you're at and you're using maybe some old DOT maps to figure out where the public land is, where the access points are. Today you've got OnX Hunt, and it's an app that you can put on your phone, and it has so much information on it. It is mind-boggling. If you're a hunter and you want to know where to go, OnX Hunt, I'm making a shameless plug here, obviously, but I'm telling you right now, the reason I am is because this is an app that really does work.
And it's hugely popular. I mean, all of a sudden, hunters are able to identify some of these landlocked pieces of property. And so corner crossing is probably going to become even more common. And that's how this case first erupted, and we're going to see more of it. So good news for sportsmen. There hasn't been a lot of good news coming out of Washington, D.C. lately for conservation and for hunters. This was a good one. Outdoor News Radio, Rob Gerisline and Tim Lesmeister winding down this week's broadcast. Tim, last week we talked about the moose thing and tribal hunting. I delved into that in more detail in my column this week, made some calls, spoke to some folks in the DNR. It turns out that Minnesota Bow Hunters, Inc. actually has a petition on their website. There's a piece of state legislation that was introduced last year in the House. I don't believe there's a Senate companion bill yet. I think it's House File 1333. I mentioned it in my column. It would implement a small state moose season, or it would order, you know, the DNR to implement such a season. Sounds like the agency is mostly, at least among the wildlife folks, in favor of investigating this. They admit the current state of moose management, that the moose plan that we have here in Minnesota is somewhat dated, doesn't really take into account a stabilized moose population. So I think we've got some wildlifers, including Dave Trauba, the new wildlife section manager, who would be on board with this. He told me that they had a meeting, his first meeting as a leader of the wildlife staff up at Camp Ripley this summer. And one of the bullet points, one of his priorities, he said, was reinstating the moose hunt. Now, I'm not sure if that agenda item moved up the ladder to the upper echelons at the Minnesota DNR or the Halls of the Walls administration, if they would say, nah, we're not interested in doing that. We're going to leave it to the bands. I will try to snoop around on that a little more in the future, but I guess for now I'm cautiously optimistic we might be able to move forward with a moose hunt here again, one of these years.
That would be great. And what I liked about your column is you outline the history of the moose here in Minnesota and how that Northwest population used to be viable. Now it's gone. You talked about how the moose plan will only allow a new hunt for non-band members if the moose populations increase over a period of time. Well, you know, we're stabilized right now. We're in a situation right now where we should be able to share some of this moose allotment and this harvest with the tribal members. So I think that the DNR really needs to look. They always say, well, we're going to study it more. No. Don't study it more. Let's get this moose season open. But the thing that really hit me about your column was the fact that we could generate some pretty substantial ching here, not by selling licenses, but by that fee that you pay just to apply for the license.
Absolutely. And Wisconsin is showing that. They've got, a dozen elk tags over there, and they're in just application fees generating over $200,000, most of which is going back into elk research in the Badger State. I definitely think we'd generate a lot of application fees here, too, in Minnesota. For some moose tags, if we did the same. You know, the actual license fees aren't necessarily that much. And Tim, I'm not one of those guys who bashes research studies and science and says we spend too much time studying things. I think research and the scientific method have been a cornerstone of American academia and our profile in the world for, a century plus. But when it comes to moose, man, we've been studying this species a long time in Minnesota. It is getting a little frustrating, all the research. And, and the fact that we don't have a better handle on what's going on with the population and why it's struggled.
Well, I am a research basher.
Ah, you're one of those guys, huh?
Yeah, I'm one of those guys. You hate me, I know. But here's the deal. The reason I bash research is because a lot of times it's used as an excuse to do a program that you wanted to do anyway. Shut something off, turn something on, add something here, subtract something there. And you're just looking for a reason, and you're fabricating it using the research. That's why I bash it. If it's quality research and if it's used the right way, I got no problem with it. But when you're dealing with a situation right now where you're saying we're not going to institute a moose hunt because we need to do a lot more research on it, I'm saying, no, you don't. Let's get the moose hunt in there, start generating some cash, and you can do your research while we're killing moose.
Well, it can definitely be an excuse not to do something. And that's what I'm driving at here a little bit. I feel like we've done our due diligence on moose. You know, how much more research do we need? You know, what's left to study? But I do think there are other situations in where due diligence is important. And we want to keep our due diligence on moose too. But it's clearly the population has stabilized. The bands are taking 1% of the herd per year. I think half those permits could go to state moose hunters. And we could generate some revenue for the species. And that would be fair. Fair is fair.
I agree. We're on the same page there.
Sounds good. Well, we will talk to you next week in Florida, right, Tim?
Sounds good. We'll catch up to you soon.
That was our buddy Tim Lesmeister. Appreciate him joining us, all of our other guests. I hope everyone has themselves a great week out of doors. I'm Rob at Jerice Line signing off for Outdoor News Radio. Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.